So we chant together, evening chanting, dedication of offering. Yeah? Page 14. Yeah. To the Blessed One, the Lord, who fully attained perfect enlightenment, to the teaching which he expounded so well, and to the Blessed One's disciple who have practiced well. To this, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, we render with offering our rightful homage. It is well for us that the Blessed One, having attained liberation, still had compassion for later generation. May these simple offerings be accepted for the long-lasting benefit and for the happiness it gives us. The Lord, the perfectly enlightened and blessed one, I render homage to the Buddha, the blessed one, bow. Teachings so completely explained by him, I bow to the Dhamma, bow. The blessed one's disciple who have practiced well, I bow to the Sangha. Now let us pay preliminary homage to the Buddha. Homage to him, the blessed one, the worthy one, the fully enlightened one. Homage to him, the blessed one, the worthy one, the fully enlightened one. Now let us, oh, one more time, Homage to him, the blessed one, the worthy one, the fully enlightened one. Now let us chant the recollection of the Buddha. A good word of the blessed one's reputation has spread as follows. Such indeed is the blessed one, the worthy one, the perfectly enlightened one, endowed with wisdom and virtue, the accomplished one, the knower of the world, the incomparable master or guide of those to be trained, teacher of God and man, the enlightened one, the blessed one. Now let us chant the supreme praise of the Buddha. The Buddha, the truly worthy one, endowed with such excellent qualities, whose being is composed of purity, transcendental wisdom, and compassion, who has enlightened the wise, like the sun awakening the lotus. I bow my head to the peaceful chief of conquerors, the Buddha, who is safe, secure refuge of all beings. As the first object of recollection, I venerate him with bowed head. I indeed am indeed the Buddha's servant. The Buddha is my Lord and guide. The Buddha is sorrow destroyer who bestows blessing on me. The Buddha, I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion, I walk the Buddha's path of awakening. For me, there is no other refuge. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. By the utterance of this truth, may I grow in the Master's way. By my devotion to the Buddha, and the blessings of this practice, by its power, may all obstacles be overcome. Bow. By body, speech, or mind, for whatever wrong action I have committed towards the Buddha, may my acknowledgement of fault be accepted, that in future there will be restraint regarding the Buddha. Now let us chant in praise of the Dhamma. Well expounded is the Dhamma of the Blessed One, can be realized in the here and the now, beyond timeless, beyond thought, Reviving investigation onward leading to the heart Nibbana can be understood by the wise each for themselves. Now let us chant the supreme praise of the Dhamma. It's excellent because it is well expounded and it can be divided into path and fruit, practice and liberation. The Dhamma holds those who uphold it from falling into delusion. I revere the excellent teaching that which removes darkness. The Dhamma, which is the supreme secure refuge for all beings, as the second object of recollection, I venerate it with bowed head. I am indeed the Dhamma servant. The Dhamma is my Lord and guide. The Dhamma is sorrow destroyer, and it bestows blessing on me. To the Dhamma, I dedicate this body and life. And in devotion, I will walk this excellent way of truth. For me, there is no other refuge. The Dhamma is my excellent refuge. By the utterance of this truth, may I grow in the Master's way. By my devotion to the Dhamma and the blessing of this practice, by his power, may all obstacles be overcome. By body, mind, speech, for whatever wrong action I have committed towards the Dhamma, may my acknowledgement of fault be accepted, that in future there will be restraint regarding the Dhamma. Now let us chant the recollection of the Sangha. Our good conduct is the order of the disciple of the Blessed One. Our upright conduct is the order of the disciple of the Blessed One. Our wise conduct is the order of the disciple of the Blessed One. Our dutiful conduct is the order of the disciple of the Blessed One. This order of the Blessed One's disciple, namely the four kinds of person, the eight type of individual, is worthy of offering, is worthy of hospitality, is worthy of gift, is worthy of reverential salutation, is an incomparable field of merits to the world. Now let us chant the supreme praise of the Sangha. Born of the Dhamma, the Sangha which has practiced well, the field of the Sangha, form of eight kind of noble beings, guided in body and mind by excellent morality and virtue, I revere the assembly of noble beings, perfected in purity, the Sangha which is the supreme secure refuge of all beings, as the third object of recollection, I venerate it with bowed head. I am indeed the Sangha servant. The Sangha is my Lord and guide. The Sangha is sorrow destroyer, and it bestows blessings on me. To the Sangha, I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion, I will walk the well-practiced way of the Sangha. For me, there is no other refuge. The Sangha is my excellent refuge. By the utterance of this truth, may I grow in the Master's way. By my devotion to the Sangha and the blessings of this practice, by its power, may all obstacles be overcome. My body, speech, or mind, for whatever wrong action I have committed towards the Sangha, may my acknowledgement of fault be accepted, that in future there will be restraint regarding the Sangha. Okay, we will end the closing puja by the three homage. Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Damo Dhamma Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi. Okay, you can be seated.
Chapter 6, Part 1, Chakrasutta Lesson 6. Introduction 3, page 22 and to 24 of Master Xuanhua's commentary. 1.1 Opening Commentary of the Heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta. The Heart of Prajna Paramita Sutra, with verse without a stand, and prose commentary consists of three parts. 1. The sutra text itself. 2. The Venerable Master Xuanhua's verse explanation. And 3. The Master's lectured commentary on the text and verses. This Heart Sutra is an essential summary. This Heart Sutra is an essential summary of the Mahayana Buddhism teaching on true emptiness. The Heart Sutra is nothing less than a summation of the wisdom of the Buddha. It distills perfectly the teaching of non-attachment, which is the doctrine of emptiness. As the Venerable Master Xuanhua says in his commentary, only the most advanced of masters can expect to grasp the full importance of the sutra by itself without the aid of a teacher, because this teaching is the heart in the heart, within the heart. Brother Thiel also concurs with Master Xuanhua's statement and also says Dharma must be delivered from the heart spontaneously and not through any higher planning via memory. Otherwise, it is only knowledge and not wisdom. The important criteria for translating the heart of Prajna Paramita Sutra as adopted by Master Xuanhua are the 8 guidelines of his Buddhist Text Translation Society, BTTS. 1. A volunteer must free himself or herself from the motive of personal fame and profit. 2. A volunteer must cultivate a respectful and sincere attitude, free from arrogance and conceit. 3. A volunteer must refrain from aggrandizing his or her work and denigrating that of others. 4. A volunteer must not establish himself or herself as the standard of correctness and suppress the work of others with his or her fault finding. 5. A volunteer must take the Buddha's mind as his or her own mind. 6. A volunteer must use the wisdom of Dharma selecting vision to determine true principles. 7. A volunteer must request virtuous elders in the 10 directions to certify his or her translation. 8. A volunteer must endeavor to propagate the teaching by printing sutras, sastras, texts, and vinaya texts when the translation are certified as being correct. When there is condition to share the translated Dharma, one must share thus allowing the translation to benefit more living beings. Part 2, Meditation. 2.1, Angulimala Sutta, MN86, translated from the Pali text by Thanissaro Bhikkhu. Thus have I heard, that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying near Savatthi at Jetagrodh, Anathapindika Monastery. And at that time, in King Pasanadi's reign, there was a bandit named Angulimala, brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He turned villages into non-villages, towns into non-towns, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeatedly killed human beings, he wore a garland, mala, made of fingers, anguli. Then the Blessed One, early in the morning, having put on his robes and carrying his outer robe and bow, went into Savatthi for alms. Having wandered for alms in Savatthi and returning from his alms round after his meal, he set his lodging in order. Carrying his robes and bow, he went along the road to where Angulimala was staying. Cowherds, shepherds, and farmers saw him going along the road to where Angulimala was staying, and on seeing him, said to him, "Don't go along that road, contemplative, for on that road is Angulimala, a brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He has turned villages into non-villages, towns into non-towns, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeatedly killed human beings, he wears a garland made of fingers. Groups of 10, 20, 30, and 40 men have gone along that road, and even they have fallen into Angulimala's hands." When this was said, the Blessed One kept going in silence. The second time, a third time, cowherds, keepers, and farmers said to the Blessed One, "Don't go along that road, contemplative. Groups of 10, 20, 30, and 40 men have gone along that road, and even they have fallen into Angulimala's hands." When this was said, the Blessed One kept going in silence. Then Angulimala saw the Blessed One coming from afar, and on seeing him, this thought occurred to him. "Isn't it amazing? Isn't it astounding? Groups of 10, 20, 30, and 40 men have gone along this road, and even they have fallen into my hands. And yet now this contemplative comes attacking, as it were, alone and without a companion. Why don't I kill him?" So Angulimala, picking up his sword and shield, buckling on his bow and quiver, followed right behind the Blessed One. Then the Blessed One wielded a feat of psychic power such that Angulimala, though running with all his might, could not catch up with the Blessed One, walking at normal pace. Then the thought occurred to Angulimala, "Isn't it amazing? Isn't it astounding? In the past, I chased and seized even a swift-running elephant, a swift-running horse, a swift-running chariot, a swift-running deer. But now, even though I'm running with all my might, I can't catch up with this contemplative, walking at normal pace." So he stopped and called out to the Blessed One, "Stop, contemplative, stop." "I have stopped, Angulimala. It is you who haven't stopped." Then the thought occurred to Angulimala, "These Sakayan contemplatives are speakers of the truth, asserters of the truth. And yet, this contemplative, even while walking, says, 'I have stopped, Angulimala. It is you who haven't stopped. Why don't I question him?'" So Angulimala, the bandit, addressed this verse to the Blessed One. "While walking, contemplative, you say, 'I have stopped.' But when I have stopped, you say, 'I haven't.' I ask you the meaning of this. How have you stopped? How haven't I?" The Buddha said, "I have stopped, Angulimala, once and for all. Having cast off violence towards all living beings, You are still unrestrained towards beings. That's how I stopped and you haven't. Angulimala said. At long last, a greatly revered great seer for my sake has come to the great forest. Having heard your verse in line with the Dhamma, I will also abandon all evil. So saying, the bandit herded his sword and weapon over a cliff into a pit.
Into a chasm.
Chasm, a pit. Then the bandit paid homage to the feet of the one well gone, and right there requested the going forth. The awakened one, the compassionate great seer, the teacher of the world, along with his deva, said to him then, come, bhikkhu. That in itself was bhikkhuhood for him. Then the blessed one set out wandering towards Savati, with Venerable Angulimala as his attendant monk. After wandering by stages, he reached Savati, and there he lived near Savati in Jeta Grove, Anatta Pindika Monastery. Now, at that time, a large crowd of people, loud and noisy, had gathered at the gates to King Pasanadi Kosala's inner palace, calling out, there is a bandit in your reign, sire, named Angulimala, brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He has turned villages into non-villages, towns to non-towns, settled countryside into unsettled countryside, having repeatedly killed human beings. He wears a garland made of fingers. The king must send him out. Then King Pasanadi Kosala, with a cavalry of roughly 500 horsemen, drove out of Savati and entered the monastery, driving as far as the ground was possible for carriage. He got down from his chariot and went on foot to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down, he sat to one side. As he was sitting there, the Blessed One said to him, what is it, great king? Has King Saniya Bimbisara of Magadha provoked you, or has the Vichavis of Vasali, or some other hostile king? No, Lord, King Saniya Bimbisara of Magadha haven't provoked me, nor has the Vichavis of Vasali, nor has some other hostile king. There is a bandit in my reign, Lord, named Angulimala, brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He has turned village into non-village, town into non-town, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeatedly killed human beings, he wears a garland made of fingers. I am going to send him out. Great king, suppose you were to see Angulimala with his hair and beard shaved off, wearing the robe, having gone forth from the home life into homelessness, refraining from killing living beings, refraining from taking what is not given, refraining from telling lies, living the holy life on one meal a day, virtuous and of fine character, what would you do to him? We would bow down to him, Lord, or rise up to greet him, or offer him a seat, or offer him rope, armed food, lodging, or medicinal requisites for curing illnesses. Or we would arrange a lawful guard, protection and defense. But how could there be such virtue and restraint in an unvirtuous evil character? Now, at that time, Venerable Angulimala was sitting not far from the Blessed One. So the Blessed One, pointing with his right arm, said to King Pasanadi Kosala, that great king is Angulimala. Then King Pasanadi Kosala was frightened, terrified, his hair standing on end. So the Blessed One, sensing the king's fear and his hair rising all, said to him, "Don't be afraid, great king, don't be afraid. He poses no danger to you." Then the king's fear, his terror, his hair standing on end subside. He ran over to Venerable Angulimala and said, "Are you really Angulimala, Lord?" "Yes, great king. What is your father's plan? What is your mother's plan?" "My father is a Ganga, great king, and my mother is Mantani." "Then may Master Ganga Mantani Putta delight in staying here. I will be responsible for your robes, arms, food, lodging, and medical equipment for storing illness." Now, it so happened that at that time, Venerable Angulimala was a wilderness dweller, an armed goer, wearing one set of the triple robe made of cast-off cloth. Made of cast-off cloth. So he said to King Pasanadi Kosala, "Enough, great king, my triple robe is complete." So King Pasanadi Kosala went to the Blessed One, and on arrival, having bowed down, sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, "It's amazing, Lord, it's astounding. How the Blessed One has tamed the untamed, pacified the unpeaceful, and brought to abide me those who were not unbound. For what we would not tame even with blunt or bladed weapon, the Blessed One has tamed without blunt or bladed weapon. Now, Lord, we must go. Many are our duties, many our responsibilities. Then do, great king, what you think it is now time to do." Then King Pasanadi Kosala got up from his seat, bowed down to the Blessed One, and keeping him to his right, departed. Then Venerable Angulimala, early in the morning, having put on his robe and carrying his outer robe and bow, went into Savati for alms. As he was going from house to house for alms, he saw a woman suffering a breech burst. On seeing her, the thought occurred to him, "How tormented are living beings, how tormented are living beings." Then having wandered for alms in Savati, and returning from his alms round after his meal, he went to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down to him, he sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, "Just now, Lord, early in the morning, having put on my robe and carrying my outer robe and bow, I went into Savati for alms. As I was going from house to house for alms, I saw a woman suffering a breech burst. On seeing her, the thought occurring to me, how tormented are living beings, how tormented are living beings. In that case, Angulimala, go to that woman and on arrival say to her, 'Sister, since I was born, I do not recall intentionally killing a living being. Through this truth, may there be well-being for you, well-being for your fetus. But Lord, wouldn't that be a lie for me? For I have intentionally killed many living beings.' Then in that case, Angulimala, go to that woman and on arrival say to her, 'Sister, since I was born in the noble birth, I do not recall intentionally killing living beings. To this truth, may there be well-being for you, well-being for your fetus.' Responding, 'As you say, Lord,' to the Blessed One, Angulimala went to that woman and on arrival said to her, 'Sister, since I was born in the noble birth, I do not recall intentionally killing a living being. Through this, may there be well-being for you, well-being for your fetus.' And there was well-being for the woman, well-being for her fetus. Then, Venerable Angulimala, dwelling alone, secluded, peaceful, ardent, and resolute, in no long time reach and remain in the supreme goal of the holy life, for which clansmen rightly go forth from home to homelessness, knowing and realizing it for himself in the here and now. He knew birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, the task done. There is nothing further for the sake of this world, and thus Venerable Angulimala became another one of the Arahants. Then Venerable Angulimala, early in the morning, having put on his robe and carrying his outer robe and bow, went into Savasi for alms. Now, at that time, a cloth thrown by one person hit Venerable Angulimala on the body. A stone thrown by another person hit him on the body. And the portrait thrown by still another person hit him on the body. So Venerable Angulimala, his head broken open and dripping with blood, his bow broken and his outer robe ripped to shreds, went to the Blessed One. The Blessed One saw him coming from afar, and on seeing him, said to him, "Bear with it, Brahman, bear with it. The fruit of the karma that would have burned you in hell for many years, many hundreds of years, many thousands of years, you are now experiencing in the here and now." Then Venerable Angulimala, having gone alone into seclusion, experienced the bliss of relief. At that time he exclaimed, "Who once was heedless, but later is not, brighten the world like the moon set free from a cloud. This evil done deed is replaced with skillfulness. He brightens the world like the moon set free from a cloud. Whatever young monk devotes himself to the Buddha's binding, he brightens the world like the moon set free from a cloud."
Okay, very good. Eh? Thank you so much, Tammy. So from this Angulimala Sutta, we understand that a person who has killed so many people, 999, and yet this same life, that same life, he can become an arahant. Then when he became an arahant, he was actually tortured and tormented by those people who actually have hatred against him because of what he has done. But the Buddha, because he's a Sammasambuddha, he knew if Angulimala has not gone through this, he would have to repay this karmic negativity in terms of what they call the fruit of that karma would have burned you in hell for many years, many hundreds of years, many thousands of years. You are now experiencing it in the here and the now. So a lot of people in the early days, they have this doubt. They say, how can a person kill 999 and yet become arahant that life? So what do you think? What do you think? That's why when it comes to causes and conditions, karma, it's very difficult for ordinary being to understand. Actually, his condition was because of what the master that he followed did. But the master also deluded. Yeah, he got psychic. The master thought, by killing all those, I don't know what the master killed and offered to King Sakka. He did it for I don't know how many successive lives. And every time he did that, the next rebirth, he was born as King Sakka. Then after that, again, he made the same thing, again, born. So he thought, this is the Dhamma, this is the truth. So he told Angulimala, Angulimala being a very dedicated kind of follower disciple. Follow the advice of the teacher. That's why he go all out to kill. Then the teacher say, you can have this garland of fingers. Yeah, he got to kill people to get the finger. Then, I don't know, I forgot what the teacher promised him. So he did that. Then, in the sutta, I remember towards the end, the Buddha told Angulimala, you go and tell your teacher, if he do it one more time, he will go down to eternal hell for very, very long. So the causes and conditions that arise and manifested this has its causes and conditions behind. And very likely, Angulimala is also cultivated in the past, but that line because of certain karmic past, very likely, he must have done this like his teacher to somebody. Then that person get into trouble. So this line, he has to reap what he sowed. That's why he has to go through this. But because of his good parami, very likely, he has the condition to become an arahant. That's why the Sammasambuddha, Sakyamuni Buddha walked towards that direction, despite the frightening story and all those things, and managed to rescue him. So Sammasambuddha that can see all this, can understand all this, will actually go forth and deliver all this condition. And it's just like when there is condition for my nature to do things, he will do. If he can benefit somebody who others may think, wow, such terrible people, how can you save him or her? How can you help him or her? But when there is causes and conditions, my nature will know. Because it keeps on happening. The condition keep on arising. Then I know. I don't know who this person is. I must meet him. Or I must help him or her. So it will manifest. So all this understanding are very important. Then what we can learn from this particular sutta is, if Angulimala doesn't have the parami to meet up with Sakyamuni Buddha and become an arahant that life, he would have to suffer for a very, very long time in hell because of what he did. But because he became an arahant, no more birth. So what happened? He has to pay back that life. Just like Mongalana, you remember? Despite all the psychic everything, he was cornered by those people who wanted to actually attack him and smash him up. He escaped 6 times because he got psychic. But finally he checked, he realized he committed one karmic past, very severe. He killed his own parents who were blind. Patricide. When he saw that karmic, he decided to accept. Because he was already an arahant, understand? You cannot escape. You have to pay them. So in kind, again the same. So causes and condition, law of karma, you cannot afford to play or ignore. It is very, very powerful. That's why there is this saying, you can afford to neglect other things, but please don't neglect your own karma. You must take care of karma. Otherwise, you will meet up with your downfall and you will be responsible for whatever you do. So when you are heedless, you create a lot of karmic negativity. Then your karmic nature will fall. Once your karmic nature falls, it will lead to causes and conditions for you to reap what you sow. So in future, like the Buddha said, your future coming or birth and life will be similarly affected. That's why he said we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. So understanding this nature's truth is very important. Okay? So this particular chapter is for this benefit. Okay, we stop here so that you can have your meditation. We are at page 42 of the Heart Sutra, part 3, meditation. There is a question from one of the Kayamitas. The question is, while sitting in half lotus for some time, the pain of the leg becomes unbearable. And then when I started the chant, the original pain ceases, but a more severe pain arises in another part of the leg. Why? So there was a question. Eh? Those who meditate and experience pain, they will understand all this. But you have not really tried and didn't experience pain, then you don't know how bad the leg pain can be. Yeah? When you sit, especially at retreat, continuous sitting and walking. So at that time, I replied to the Kayamita, I said, first, you must understand what meditation is. That one is very important. And what are you doing in the name of meditation? So whatever you do, these two inquiries you must have. Do you understand what is meditation and what are you doing in the name of meditation, your purpose and intent? If you don't have such an understanding, then there is this tendency to react to unpleasant sensation or feeling that arise during meditation. By labeling that pain, the sensation as pain, which is an aversion or an ill will. And as we all know, ill will is one of the five mental hindrances of mind. That will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. As such, you are already caught or trapped by it. Because of your dislike or aversion towards that sensation which you label as pain, the unpleasant sensation in your mind, within your mind, then your mind will try to do something else to overcome it. Like in your case, chanting. To either suppress it or make it go away. As chanting is just another skillful means to train the mind, and it is still within the field of thought. Hence, by doing so, you have lost your focus. Just meditation consists of two parts. The first step is to develop the training of the mind to be constantly aware, leading to heedfulness. Then the second step is to use the trained mind that is heedful to meditate or cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Understanding this will enable you to just silence your mind and patiently relax your body and mind to allow the sensation to be. Without any like or dislike for that sensation, because it is the nature of this body to develop that sensation, if you do not know how to relax, to enable the qi to flow through the blockage, then sati will take over, and this can result in a shift of consciousness to cease the so-called pain. So just be aware or mindful always to observe what is going on within your form and mind, and to investigate via mindfulness to understand how the movement of mind from one state to another comes to be. That is to understand how the stirring of the mind comes to be and how the mind can be conditioned into negativity. emotions, selfishness, fear, etc. They are delusion. Upon seeing or hearing something or thinking of something, etc. So hopefully, with this explanation, you understand. So the next time you experience pain or what, you tell yourself, do you really understand what you are doing in the name of meditation when you go to retreat, especially? So I always say, you go to a retreat to meditate, not to torture yourself, understand? If you go there and develop the pain, it's like torturing yourself. Then what do? You do not understand what is going on and you label it pain. Pain is a negative emotion. It is a negative, what they call craving or desire. So this five mental hindrance of mind. The first two is one pair. Sensual desire is positive craving. Aversion or ill will is the second mental hindrance. So if you label it as pain, it will become a mental hindrance. That it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why you keep on fighting it, fighting it, fighting it. It won't go away. But I experienced it before, and finally I overcome it by knowing how to relax. I relax into it. Then finally, the mindfulness takes over and it ceases. Initially, you had to endure it. So there was one incident I remember. I think 1988 or what. I was attending a 3-day, 2-night weekend, 8-precept meditation session at Brickfield. Then that time I was sitting, meditating. On the second day, the pain become like very severe. But then, I had developed the understanding of what pain is. So my teacher Ajahn Chah taught me, body is body, mind is mind, mind never the body, body never the mind. We choose to take care of mind. Because body, although important too, mind is most important. When you take care of mind, you develop understanding, then you can free yourself. So when it appeared, I was determined to see it through, to understand it. So very strange, because I have faith in him. So I tell myself, no matter what happened, I'm going to believe what he tell me, and I'm going to see it through. So I endure. Until the pain was so intense, at that time, I didn't really know how to relax deep into it. And I haven't developed the stability of mindfulness. That time I was still, I think, very young, 30-something, 33 or 34 years old. Then what happened was when I sat through it, that pain became very sharp and very intense. But I tried my very best to relax and let it be. But because the tactile thing was so strong, and luckily I make that, I don't know what you call it, I make that determination. There's something like the Buddha when he sat under the what they call the Bodhi tree and became enlightened. He said not until he become enlightened, he will not arise from that seat. Even his blood, sinus or whatever dry up, he will not arise. But I was not so I should say sobri. So what I say was, because the thought keep on like hinting to me, you know, if you don't stop, this pain is going to make your leg terrible. You may even have injury and all those things. But I was so determined. I said, because I believe him. So I said, body is a body. Mind is mind. Body never the mind. Mind never the body. So I said, that it becomes so intense, or so sharp and all. But that power, because it was so strong, like you want to relax, it's not easy when confronting that severe tactile sensation. So what happened was, all of a sudden, when it reached a very strong intensity, the mind flashes through. There is a very bright flash of like sudden light. I experience it within my mind. So what happened was, when it flashes through, all of a sudden, I realized the pain no more. Everything gone. Then that time, I have a lot of virya, a lot of energy, because of that shift in consciousness. The whole mind becomes so different. Then I suddenly realized that leg there, that sensation, everything, no more. Then I wanted to find out. I said, how come like that? So strange. So I used my awareness. That time when it flashed through, I actually was with the true mind, the silent mind, the awareness. Then the awareness, when it looked, the body experiencing the tactile, the you all describe as the pulling, the sharp pain, and also the movement inside there, the awareness can see. The awareness understand what is going on. Then I realized the mind can be separated, completely separated from the form. That's why, because of that, my faith become very strong. Then from that day onward, I never had problem with pain anymore. Yeah. Because I sat through it and it flashes through. But later on, I came to the true understanding. Actually, you need to relax and maintain awareness or mindfulness. When you are mindful and aware, the chi flow, everything flow, but you have to be very relaxed, no constriction, nothing. Then the so-called tactile sensation, that condition, the pain, is like completely gone, released. So after that particular experience, I remember, from that day onward, I do not fear pain anymore. I dare to look at it. I dare to relax into it and maintain awareness. Then I remember, I read that time Ajahn Mahabodhi, his book. He also went through pain. He also experienced something very similar, but he did it in a different way. I cannot recall how he did it. So after that incident, my nature comes to understand that this form and mind, they are not what you think. Then later on, I look at the what they call the inside knowledge, you remember? They call it what? What is the Pali word? The 16 jnana knowledge. Jnana knowledge. Yes. The first jnana is able to discern, yeah, clearly between nama rupa. Understand? So initially, what I used to read from the Dhamma book is They explain this nama rupa parisenanya, nah, which is the first insight knowledge, as when you know the mind is the mind, the form is the form, then you discern. Understand? But after I experienced that, I realized no. Nama rupa pariccheda jnana, the meaning is the mind, like my teacher said. Body is just a body. Mind is mind. It can be separated. You can only separate it with understanding. Relax into it, maintain awareness, and it sits. That's why later on, whatever sensation that comes, especially like pain after long sitting, you know, then I just relax into it. That's why at that time, from age of 33, 34 onward, I never had problem with pain, and I was able to endure. And every time, all this whatever, like so-called sensation that you know will lead to pain, I just relax into it, then maintain awareness. Then the awareness take over, then it sits. Then I can sit for 2-3 hours, sometimes 3-4 hours, without having any problem. Then I tested with the itchiness on. When I developed continuous mindfulness, I realized that mindfulness was able to like shape away that sensation. Means when you are in true sati, awareness, continuous awareness, the aggregate of mind does not arise. You understand? The aggregate of mind does not arise. That's why, because of that, you are in the relaxed state of mindfulness or awareness that enable you to like sit or be in that posture for a long period of time. But later on, especially after I aged, yeah, when I was, I think, 60 plus. You remember Vincent? Yeah? Vincent? You know what he told me? You know? Yeah, I got this back problem. Yeah? After a long period of sitting, I didn't know it was from the sitting. He told me, a lot of meditators got this problem. I say, what problem? They have this backache problem. Yeah. Then he teaches the exercise, remember, to release the lactic acid. Because that is long sitting. Yeah. Although I can relax, but as you age, the body is still a body. That's why finally, his style of curing, he hit you or no. And I tell you, very painful or no. But I can endure. He came to my house and he whacked me almost 1 solid hour. He, every time after half an hour or 1 hour, I said, okay, but a bit more can be another half an hour. That's why my wife saw he came, but he was very good. So after he healed my this one, I decided not to be a hero anymore. That's why I don't want to, during retreat, sit. It actually happened during one of the retreat, I think meant to be. I every time bring along my own cushion together with my meditation attire. That day, I remember Jinhao and Song was so helpful, came to my house and tell me, Brother Teo, leave it to me, I take off for you. So they all, before I even have time to check my luggage, I say, where is my luggage? Oh, Brother Teo, all up ready. So I thought, the cushion all up. That was the only year I arrived, I checked, no cushion. Then you know what happened, they managed to go and find one piece inside there. Very, very hard on them. Wow, I think that is the karmic debt I had to pay back. That retreat, I tell you, I finally told some of the kayamita, I said, cannot. I need to sit on the chair. Otherwise, no point. No. So after that, that's why I tried to sit. we buy this one, then we have the table. Then now I feel very comfortable. I don't need to go through all those things. But you want me to sit, I can still sit. But no point. But as you age, please, yeah? Your health is very important. So pain can be dealt with. I have gone through it. Then I understood it. That's why I can advise you all. Yeah? So remember, relax, maintain awareness or mindfulness and be with it. When you are with it, what happens is that so-called tactile, whatever that thing, without word, whether sharp pain or pulling sensation or what, or that severe tactile sensation, which is very, very unpleasant, but we are so conditioned. Unpleasant sensation, we label it as pain. So what happened is, I realized, when you label it as pain, it becomes an aversion. It's a mental hindrance. That's why it prevents your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why you cannot meditate. Then when I relax and maintain awareness and do not label it, be with it, like I teach Kogluk, the third way, whatever sensation arise or whatever mind state arise can be anger, hatred, fear, or even pain. You relax, maintain awareness, silent, and be with it. Because you didn't arise the mental hindrance, what happened? There is nothing to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. Awareness is one of the spiritual faculties. That's why awareness takes over. You understand? When awareness takes over, then the mind becomes different. Then the meditative mind, the true mind, the silent mind arises. Then I realize during that time, mind enters sati. And when mind enters sati, I remember during that time, the sitting, the slightest movement or whatever is like magnified. Yeah. Actually, at that time, I didn't meet my last teacher yet. I didn't really locate my gateway yet. But I already understood all this. That's why, when you understand the essential Dhamma as taught by the Buddha, what are mental hindrances? So don't go and labor, understand? I realize that there is one type of tradition where they teach noting one. You remember? They ask you to note one. Pain, pain, pain. Thinking, thinking, thinking. Remember? Nowadays, I seldom hear about that teaching already. I also don't know why. But they came up with the understanding that you must not label it. Understand? So, whatever it is, when you do that, you ask yourself, what are you doing in the name of meditation or developing the understanding of the Buddha Dhamma? When I label it negatively, it becomes a mental hindrance. It will hinder my mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calm. So why you want to note and label? You are creating more what they call mental hindrance. And the other thing is, by noting and labeling, you are creating more thought. Understand now? So how can you be aware? That's why later on, when I came out to share, I have all this understanding that I can share this. I think there are other parts where people ask me about pain. I explain it the way I explained to you just now. Well, this part is only based on the first part, yeah? Where I use this word. Understanding. Yeah? You have to understand what you are doing, yeah? In the name of meditation, and you have to understand what is meditation. More or less the same, but I didn't explain the mental hindrance part. Yeah? So if you include the mental hindrance part, you will understand. Then we go to the next page, 3.2. Five ways to overcome negative unwholesome thought. So this one, when the unwholesome thought, thought with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion has arisen, you have to arrange the first right effort to abandon it. How you abandon it? The Buddha taught five ways. So I read through for you all. This five ways is very useful. The first two are thought ways. The Buddha teaches five ways to overcome negative, unwholesome thought that has arisen. First is to think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. For example, if there is anger, then develop metta. And if there is cruelty, develop compassion. And if there is fear, develop faith, sadha. So when you are with the direct opposite wholesome thought, your mind cannot be conditioned into negativity. You understand? When you have metta, you cannot become angry. When you have compassion, you cannot develop cruelty. When you have faith, there is no fear. So the direct opposite wholesome thought is a temporary skillful means to help you overcome or abandon that unwholesome thought that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So what happens is, if you do this, it's a temporary solution. Do you realize that? Every time the evil root arises, you go somewhere, sit, silence your mind, and radiate metta. Or you develop karuna, compassion. Or you develop sadha and all those things. So it's not a permanent solution. It does not fix your problem. But it's a good initial skillful means to reverse all this. That's why the Buddha encouraged practitioner, new cultivator, to actually cultivate metta. Metta is a very good meditation. Metta bhavana. Bhavana is the meditative training. You use it to develop metta, it becomes metta bhavana. That's why if you use it to develop vipassana wisdom, that is called vipassana bhavana. And you develop concentration, that is samatha bhavana. So bhavana is a very general word. It means mind training, mental training, mind development. It's called bhavana, okay? Then the second way is to think of the consequence of holding on to that unwholesome thought or evil root. If you do not abandon it, then the evil root, which is the root of all evil, will condition you into negativity and make you an evil person. For example, anger. Anger can condition one into hatred, thereby becoming violence. An angry person, through its violence, can kill and harm, and even abuse others. So when you have the understanding to reflect and to contemplate, and you tell yourself, my life, I will never allow it to go that way. Yeah, this is an evil root, root of all evil. If I hold on to that evil root, it can be anger or hatred or jealousy. It made me evil. And it leads to negativity of coming. Do I want to have such condition to allow me to have the coming problem? Definitely, you will, through understanding, determine to abandon it. So when you see the consequence of holding on to that wrong thought or unwholesome thought, you become very determined not to allow it to arise. So seeing the danger of holding on to this thought, which has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, is very important. If you see the danger, then you will immediately determine to strive on with heedfulness to overcome it, to abandon it. Then how do you do it? The actual doing it is the third way and the fourth way. These two are meditative training. So the third way the Buddha said, relax and maintain awareness, which I have been teaching you all under the awareness-based meditation using the four support. But here, I use two. Relax and maintain awareness, we are just let things be. Means don't react, don't stir your mind, don't label it as sensual desire or you. Don't arise any of this, what they call mental hindrance. So relax and maintain awareness, we are just letting things be, or let things be. This is the meditative way born of understanding that the natural state of mind before it's stirring is already the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and silent inner awareness. And the flowering of thought is the very ending of that thought. So that thought can have the content of anger, hatred, fear, emotion, or even pain. So the content of consciousness inside the vijnana develops the emotion. So this thought that has this emotion, you need to allow it to flower. Flower means what? Allow it to dissipate the condition behind the arising of that anger or that jealousy or that fear. You understand? Because this fear, anger, or jealousy, they are dependent originating. Do you understand? Before there is any of this mind state which is negative, there was none. You are normal. Then how did they arise? There are causes and conditions behind, through your senses, like what we went through last time. So when you understand this, then the flowering of thought is the very ending of that thought by J. Krishnamurti. It's very beautiful. But you have to try it in the meditation. Be with it, relax into it, maintain awareness over that negativity or mind state or unwholesome mind state. It can be anger, it can be hatred, it can be fear, jealousy, or whatever. Be with it, stay with it, and see it disappearing. Then you will understand that all this negative tendency or emotion or wrong thought or unwholesome thought, they are conditioned arising entity, dependent originating. It's not intrinsic within your true mind, your true nature. Your true nature has none of this. So just relax and maintain awareness that everything will dissipate and cease. Do you understand? When it dissipates and ceases, the original mind returns. The true mind returns. That's how you develop the awareness within. Yeah, you don't think anymore. You don't feed it with any more deluded, wrong thought energy. So everything will cease. Yeah, they are all dependent, originating, condition, arising, cause of phenomenon. So this third way is the best and most important. Do it. When you experience pain or whatever, you do it. When you experience anger, fear, emotion, phobia, silent, aware, stay with it. And weakness, it cease, disappear. You have to go through it at least once. Yeah. Then the nature inside become like so beautiful. I still remember the first time I went through it, I relaxed, maintained awareness, and I stayed with the emotion. The emotion. I remember it was, at that time, it was some agitation. I think something happened. Then at that time, there was agitation. Then I remember the third way. So I give it a try. I silent my mind and stay with it. And you know what happened? That day was the most beautiful understanding I developed. When I did that, within less than 1 or 2 minutes, I start to see that thing, like that tense emotion, suddenly like releases itself. Like suddenly, no more like early on. Then it starts to dissipate. Until finally, completely at the heart area, there was nothing. completely empty, and that original state of mind, which is the true mind, the awareness nature, surfaced. Then I realized the heart there is so tranquil, so still, so peaceful, so quiet. Then there was so much joy. Then after I come out of it, I realized this is what the Buddha meant by the third way. Then I realized the teaching is so true. All this mind state, sankhara, whether it's positive or negative emotion, they are dependent originating, exactly like what the Buddha taught. Feeling is impermanent. Feeling, condition, craving, emotion is due to delusion, wrong view. There's a wrong view, self-delusion, security, condition, wrong thought. So when you understand how avijja paccaya sankhara, then you understand how wrong thought can condition suffering. Well, what are wrong thoughts? Thought that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Thought that condition our fear, our insecurity, our misery, our sorrow, our lamentation, even insecurity. So all this is how you are able to actually understand that the wrong thought is already there. So what I'm teaching you is teaching you how to recognize wrong thought. But what the text teach you is right thought. And they only quote the limited four Brahma Vihara state as right thought. But actually right thought a lot. All your virtuous thoughts, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, they are all right thought. But through my own cultivation and practice, I realize it is more relevant and important to understand what is wrong thought. That's why finally I summarize the understanding and allow you all to have this understanding. I say, whenever you are not peaceful and unhappy, the wrong thought is there. Why? Because if you are not peaceful means there is fear, there is emotion, there is anger. Otherwise, how can you be unhappy? Then your mind must have stirred. The emotion must be there. The evil root must be there. That's why wrong thought condition all this. So whenever you are not peaceful, yeah, and whenever you are like, just now, what is the word are you saying? Unhappy. Cannot recall. Whenever you are unhappy and not peaceful, the wrong thoughts are there. The evil roots are there. So that is a very good check. So every time when you are mindful, that's why you can never allow it to stir, like Po Cheng said. Well, you are mindful, you are aware. And you can sense it. Understand? Not? That sensitivity is so strong. So whenever the slightest dislike or unhappiness or the slightest lack of peace, you immediately aware on. Then you know already something is wrong. Then what you do? You relax and maintain awareness, then let it cease. Then you trace the origination back up and retrospectively reverse it. How do you trace? The fourth way. The fourth way is trace the origination factor of the unwholesome thought and then retrospectively reverse it via the cultivation of mindfulness of Dhamma, the third category of practice, mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. This is to develop the wisdom to free. So the internal sense bases, like I explained before, we have our five physical senses. The eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the tactile. Then we have the brain, the sixth sense. So the internal sense bases are this one. Then the external sense bases are their respective sense data. Understand? So you trace the origination factor. Like, take for example, how did you become angry? You came to know you have become angry, that emotion has arisen. Okay? Then how do you trace? The Buddha said, maintain mindfulness, awareness. When you maintain mindfulness and awareness, what happens is that origination factor that created this emotion, you can understand, you can see that. But when you are mindful and aware, the first thing is when that negative emotion ceases, then like the Satipatthana Sutta under Dhammanupassana, the six internal and six external sense bases, together the first category of mindfulness. Mindfulness of the mental hindrance. You remember? The five mental hindrance. This unwholesome thought is actually one of the mental hindrance. So when they arise, you develop awareness, stay with it the third way, then you realize it ceases. So what is your understanding? What is your understanding? The understanding is you will come to know how the arisen mental hindrance is to be by not doing anything. You understand? By being just relaxed and awake. Cease. Then you continue to be aware and mindful and develop this cultivation of the six internal and six external sense bases. The next time you see similar situation or condition, like that person that conditioned you to have anger, emotion, then you realize through your seeing consciousness, understand not? That perceive it in wrong view, negativity of mind state. Then you stir your mind. That's how you become angry, unhappy, or it can be fear, fearful. So mindfulness is very important. When you aware that this is how it happened, then you ask yourself, why did I continuously stir my mind, react this way? Then you will trace the origination factor because you have certain negative perception of that person because of memory, past incidences, or whatever. So what must you do? You have to inquire. How can I develop the understanding as taught by the Buddha so that I don't react and create this wrong thought and stir my mind? The Buddha always asks us to let things be. See things as they are. Be at peace with all situations. So see things as they are means that understanding is very important. In the seeing, there's only the seeing consciousness, no one to see. But to develop this wisdom and understanding take a while. If you are not a Dhamma practitioner, not a cultivator, you don't have your past, you don't have a good teacher, all this for you to find out on your own is very difficult. You know, what is being taught, commonly taught, is the thought based on. Very, very, I should say, dogmatic type of cultivation. They give you instruction, they advise you to do this, do that, and you gotta believe them and do. And by doing so, even noting pain, 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 you think you are doing vipassana. You understand? That's how they become trapped, gullible. So what happened is, after I have the understanding, and after I have gone through all this, I help you all to develop the understanding. I came out with this understanding. I say, yeah, through the direct seeing, the pure awareness, I can see. Thing is just the way it is. Then I recall the Buddha's teaching, condition like that, things will be like that. Then I link it further. The world is the world. Condition like that, things will be like that. Okay? Then after that, I say, human being how? Living being how? They are just the way they are, like the Buddha said. Then I add in this one. Deluded people do deluded things. Angry people do angry things. Selfish people. Then with this, I realize, hey, I can come to terms with the reality within the moment, whether it's a life situation or human being. No more problem. I can accept the reality for what it is. Why? Because as per my awareness-based meditation, I saw it. Everything is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. Without causes and conditions, nothing arises. That's why that law of Patisya Samuppada or law of dependent origination is so powerful. Then you will understand why the Buddha say when condition is like that, things will be like that. Yeah, this is the reality. It cannot be otherwise. You understand? Causes and conditions are set. They are what they are because of their past, their karmic, and whatever. So at that moment, their delusion conditioned to be what they are. That's why deluded people do deluded things. Selfish people do selfish things. Angry people do angry things. So when you have all this understanding, you can be at peace. And this is what straightening the view is all about. You straighten your view to develop the right view, to understand clearly the law of mind, paticca samuppada, the law of dependent origination. The paticca samuppada doesn't occur only within our form and mind. Understand? This law of dependent origination applies to all phenomena. All phenomena exhibit the same dependent origination, dependent on condition it arises. When condition cease, it ceases. So this understanding is very important. That's why in the Diamond Sutta, they say, each year you waver. Means everything is conditioned dhamma. That's why when I read that one, I straight away understand the dhamma deep within. Then zumong huan pao means dreamland and illusion, like a bubble and a shadow. Yeah. And everything happened this way, like a morning dew. And a lightning flash. Yeah, everything just happened like that. Some last longer, some immediate. Split second, gone. 丁作如是观, you should contemplate it such. That's why you must reflect, contemplate, inquire, and develop this awakening to straighten your view. Understand that? Because each year you waver is very important. Everything is conditioned dhamma. Conditioned dhamma depend on condition to arise. When condition cease to be, it cease. When condition continue to sustain its existence, it continue to exist. Understand that? So what is birth and death? Dependent originating. No, not a permanent unchanging entity that you can hold on to, cling on to, grab on to and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. Impossible. This is what impermanent is all about. And because of it, it is empty, not real, anatta, non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity. So through all this direct seeing, awakening, you start to see clearly how your form and mind behave, how you function as a human being, how you are conditioned into negativity to wrong view, avijja, and wrong thought. Okay? So this part is very important. Yeah? Then the last one, I just read through quickly. Yeah? If all the above four ways also cannot help you, then you must use your own self-determination as recommended by the Buddha. Yeah, this one is using your own willpower with clenched teeth and your tongue towards your palate. You should determine strongly to abandon the negative thought. Because if you cannot do that for above four, especially the third and the fourth, the Buddha also don't know how to teach you. You do it on your own. Means you have to use your willpower to abandon. You have to. Sometimes you force yourself. Then you got no chance. So all this is what is being taught. Then hopefully you can benefit from it through the understanding. Okay, we move on a bit more. What is meditation? The seventh lesson, page 45. Birth theory emphasizes the importance of understanding the following. What is meditation? So that we understand what we are doing in the name of meditation. And this will keep us always in focus. So wherever you go, retreat or whatever you do at home, remind yourself, what are you doing in the name of meditation? And what is meditation? If meditation is heedfulness, As per the Dhammapada saying, verse 21, 22, 23, then are we training our mind to be heedful? To be heedful, there are two parts. You have to be ever mindful, constantly meditating. So the first part is ever mindful. How do we start? That's why we have to develop mindfulness, awareness-based meditation to stabilize this mindfulness so that we become ever mindful. That's why training the mind to be aware, to be mindful is very important. Not to use thought-based method and technique to create more thinking. To be aware is to be in the state of relaxed awareness. And what is sati? Mindfulness, which is awareness before the knowing, before the arising of thought, before the arising of the angry mind. That's why we need to relax, maintain awareness. Don't try to know, don't try to do. Then the thought cannot arise. When thought does not arise, your true mind manifests. But your true mind is always there. Never, never a part of from your nature. That nature is always there. So when you understand that, what you need to do is to silence the mind, not to arise any thought. That's an awareness-based meditation is to reverse the heedless thinking to realize the true mind. Okay? So I will read on. There are two steps involved in developing meditation as taught by the Buddha. The first step is to train the mind to be heedful. We are using a skillful mean or object of meditation to anchor the mind in awareness or develop mindfulness so that the mind is relaxed, aware, silent, and mindful within. So this training of the mind, you can start with skillful means, no problem. Like anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, okay? You develop the training until that mindfulness is developed. That's why in the Kaya Nupassana, the first category of training is mindfulness of the in and out breath. But don't go and do absorption and one-pointedness, understand that. The key instruction is breathing in aware, breathing out aware. No mention of focusing, concentrating, or stay anywhere. It's just mindfulness of the in and out breath. So whatever skillful mean that can allow you to anchor your mind and develop mindfulness, you can use it. But when you understand, actually you don't need them. Yeah, they are only skillful means. Why can't you, like Hui Ning, go straight into the silent mind? Realize the true mind which is without thought. Yeah. So this true mind which is without thought is just an awareness nature. That's like Hui Ning thought Wu Nian. So how to have no thought? Don't think, don't do. Understand? Not? If you try to do, then that doing is by the thought. That's why don't try to know. The knowing is also by the thought. So to have a silent mind, which is without thought, wu nian, you just relax and maintain the awareness nature. Means aware, finish. Aware, finish. Then, if you are patient, you know how to relax and let things be, then everything will cease. The sankhara that arise because you lack spiritual faculty, they will slow down and cease. That's why I say, allow your mind to return to its natural state before the stirring, before the arising of thought. That is your true mind. So to do that, you need to relax and prevent the arising of thought energy to feed the sankhara activity. Means don't do anything. Don't try to know. Just relax and maintain aware. Aware, finish. Aware, finish. Then let it settle down. Let it settle down. Like Po Cheng said, you must do until it surfaces. Then only you see the result. Otherwise, you don't see the result. If you are impatient, you cannot do. Where you doubt, you don't have faith. But when you have faith, like what I have faith in Achayantra, body is just a body, mind is mind, mind never. He just told me these few words. Then I dare to sit through. But I was lucky actually. It flashes through. Yeah, I have my bus, must be my bus. Yeah, I was told one Canadian monk. I went to one of the talks that Canadian monk related. He tried to see through pain when he was doing Vipassana meditation in Burma, Myanmar. What happened was, he said, he tried. It was so painful here and there. Then you know what happened? He fainted. 4 days in the hospital. And he himself shared. Yeah. That's why when I heard that, I said, well, lucky I didn't faint. Not easy. You don't have the parami and the condition, I tell you. Cannot. But I think Ajahn Chah must have done it before. That's why he tell me, he dared to tell me this. And I can feel his energy, his loving kindness, his metta, that his Dhamma is so beautiful. Everything resonates with my inner nature. That's why I have faith in him. So if you have faith in me, you try. Understand? The awareness-based meditation, relax when the awareness, then allow it to happen. Then when it happens, that is what the reward will be. Then you become very different. You progress along the path of Dhamma very fast. And you understand all this very fast. Then from Hui Ming's first Homa, Union, you understand it deeply. Then from there, you can proceed to stabilize the awareness, to realize the essence of mind. Then when you realize the essence of mind, use it to meditate. Use it to meditate. Use it to observe, to develop the wisdom, the understanding. Then when they arise, then the second Homa, no mark of a self become clear. No mark of others become clear. Then no mark of Dhamma, no mark of life, existence, everything within the conditional. The that that arise and exists within the conditional world is not from the unconditioned. The unconditioned from the awareness nature, all these don't exist. You understand? So this is how you use the silent mind, the direct seeing, the awareness to develop the heedfulness, to cultivate, to awaken, to insight into phenomena, to develop clear understanding. So when all this surface, then meditation become very easy. Okay? Then the third hallmark, not so easy, not so fast. You really have to locate the gateway, the fourth support. You must silent until that nature, the awareness nature, the silent mind, detect it on its own. Then all the yin yang energy will melt inside and become pure energy. Then it will activate the internal transformation. Then your consciousness will become more and more refined, more and more refined. Until one day it is so fine, the mundane mind collapses. Yet the mundane mind cannot withstand that fine vibration, which is born of pure energy, born of the pure nature. That's why when the mundane mind collapses, a lot of things will happen in your brain here, and you will come to know. Then when that nature shines forth, we have the mundane mind no more to cloud your true mind. Then the awareness nature shines forth. Then you are the awareness throughout the day, every moment, every instant, you are just aware. Where there is no more mundane mind, the gross mundane mind to cloud your nature. Then during that time, you will understand why that mind does not dwell. Well, your nature got no words, no thought, no concept, no delusion. That's why it cannot dwell. And that one only Bodhisattva, the higher beings, when they reach certain progress, then only they can realize that. That's why Hui Ming has that parami. He can realize that. That's why he can teach that teaching. Actually, very few people can teach the second and third Homa. The first one, yes, quite a number. Quite a number. The second one, there are some, but not that many. Yeah. The third one really very, very well. The third Homa is very, very well. I have yet to find one. Yeah. Yeah. Apart from experiencing my own, the Monday mind collapse in the year 1989, and it's already 30 over years. And this nature, the supra-mundane mind, just shine forth. That's why it's ever mindful. Clarity is all the time like that. That's why understanding is seeing differently, then it shares direct from there. That's why I cannot remember. The word I used just now, straight away, not there already. That is not from memory. That's why I had to ask. Luckily, Andy recall. Then that day, Sian also recall. Then there was one incident. What was it? Yeah?
Then he recalled the basic Theravada.
Tell me. Tell me recall. Yeah? Because I say after that, then he recall. The basic Theravada teaching. Yeah, then I understand what I want to say. Because when I say, it's that nature that share. Understand? Not? And what is this nature? Direct from that nature. That's why some people use this book, the title, Pachamabhava, straight from the heart. You heard of the title, yeah? Straight from the heart. That one is from that nature. But they know the nature is here at the heart level. Okay? So this one is very important. So step two, is to make use of this trained mind in silent awareness to see things as they are, means the direct see, to develop meditation as taught by the Buddha, namely the cultivation of daily mindfulness, or sati sampajana, means mindfulness and clear comprehension, the four foundations of mindfulness, the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, and the Noble Eightfold Path. All these essential dhamma, you must cultivate, even the four right effort, because Noble Eightfold Path covers all the perfect, the four right effort, then the right view. All this you have to cover. You have to cultivate the right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood. All this you must reflect, contemplate, then develop the understanding. So together with the mindfulness, the awareness, and the Noble Eightfold Path, without mindfulness, you cannot cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. With mindfulness, you can cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. This is how it arises and happens. Okay, then we go on. The aim of meditation is to realize the state of enlightenment that is beyond thought and beyond time. Means psychological time. Because the Dhamma is timeless, akaliko, in Pali. So if you want to meditate to realize the enlightenment, which is what the Buddha taught, then you have to realize this, the state of enlightenment that is beyond thought, beyond mind. Under the salutation of the Dhamma, all the characteristics of the true Dhamma that the Buddha wants you to develop awakening is all stated there. That's why that salutation to the Dhamma is very beautiful, and I like to recite it. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo. Well expounded is the Dhamma by the Buddha. And what is this Dhamma? The Buddha said, this Dhamma is sanditiko. Can be realized in the here and the now. No need to wait till you die. After sanditiko is what? This Dhamma is akaliko. Timeless, beyond thought, beyond time. Thereafter, that is ehipaseko. Because it is the truth, it stands up to investigation. You are welcome to investigate. So sanditiko, akaliko, ehipasiko, that openeiko means leading inward into your nature, into your heart, into your true mind. Then pacetang veditako enovi can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. That's why you no need to check one. When you awaken to it, that being understands. Because only the wise can realize it. Can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. Okay? So look for all these characteristics. If they promise you after death, eternal life, eternal heaven, forget about it. That is the mind sanditiko. And if it's related to thought, forget about it. Where this Dhamma is beyond thought, beyond thought. Then stand up the investigation, leading inward. So all these are the unique characteristics. Okay. So the next one is, thought-based meditation is limited to the field of thought, Hence, it cannot free your mind or lead to realization of the state which is beyond thought, beyond time, or psychological time which is beyond mind. Because the moment of thought is psychological time. Then diligently cultivate the five spiritual faculties, Sada, Virya, Sti, Samadhi, and Panya, to overcome the five mental hindrances of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, or lethargic mind, restlessness of mind, and doubt. So the five spiritual faculties and five mental hindrances we already went through many times. Huh? Very easy. You just read through, then develop the contemplative understanding, then understand the importance of the spiritual faculty to overcome the mental hindrance. Don't worry about the mental hindrance. Focus on the spiritual faculty. Then the mental hindrance will cease to be. Okay? The next one. The danger of having self-delusion and not comprehending what satiety. When you have the understanding that Dhamma, you will see the danger of this satiety, self-delusion, the ego. The egoic mind that manifests itself through satiety is very, very dangerous. And that one is not easy to root out. People thought it's easy. They thought to be a sotapan is easy. It's not easy. Satiety. If you go thought-based, you cannot root it out. But if you listen to Dharma, contemplate, reflect, first, second turning can still develop the awakening. You don't have to really, that the sainthood way, the first stage of sainthood, the second stage of sainthood is relatively much, much easier. You only need to have a glimpse of the cessation. Means you only need to experience a moment of the true mind, the silent mind. You understand? Your true nature. You no need to stabilize it. You understand? Yeah? Okay? You see, you know? Because the same way, that's why I use this word relatively easy. Yeah? I don't know whether you all find it strange or not. Just, most people will say, hey, to become enlightened is already so difficult. You know? You say relatively easy. Because relative to the bodhisattva way, understand? You know? The one that go through the true awareness-based training, realizing that nature clearly, realize the essence of mind, your true nature. So that one is not easy. But to have a glimpse, relatively easy. When you listen to Dhamma, you reflect, you contemplate, then you develop the understanding. Then one day, suddenly, when the condition fall into place, it will just happen. The cessation, the glimpse of it. After that, they transform. From Buddhajana to an Arya. They call it the change of lineage. Oh, 9:15, I think. We have to end already. Yeah? Okay, we stop here. Yeah? We stop. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Page 46. Chanda Singh Ji.
Di jie di po luo jie di po luo shen. 揭谛菩提萨婆诃揭谛揭谛波罗揭谛波罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃揭谛揭谛波罗揭谛波罗僧 揭谛菩提萨婆诃观自在菩萨行深般若波罗蜜多时早揭 受想行识亦复如是，舍利子，是诸法空相无生不灭，不垢不净，不增不减。是故空中无色，无受想行识，无眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味触法，无眼界乃至无意识界，无明亦无。至无老时，亦无老时即无苦集灭道，无智亦无得已，无所得故，菩提萨埵依般若波罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍，远离颠倒梦想，究竟涅槃三世诸佛依般若波罗蜜多故得般若三藐三菩提故，知般若波罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，是无上咒，不等等咒，能除一切苦厄，是不虚。故说般若波罗蜜多咒，即说咒曰：揭谛揭谛，波罗揭谛，波罗僧，揭谛菩提萨婆诃。揭谛揭谛，波罗揭谛，波罗僧，揭谛菩提萨婆诃。揭谛揭谛，波罗揭谛，波罗僧，揭谛菩提萨婆诃。
Let us rejoin. Sado,
Sado,
sado, sado. Okay, now.
Namo Ratna Sutta. Yani da bhutani samagatani bhummani vāya ivata dekhe sadeva bhutani Sumanagavantu atopisakkacchasunandubhasitam tasmahi bhutani sammetasabbe mettaṃ dharotamanusiyā Pajaya divacharato charanti evali tasmahi nerakata apamatta Sakye suvayam ratanam paritam nano samam asti tathagatena idam vibhute ratanam paritam etena sakyena suvakti hotu ayam viragam amatam panitam yadajjaga sakyamuni samahito natena dham Veda samati kinci idam vidham me ratanam panitam etena sacchena suvati hotu yam buddha setho parivannayi sucim samadhimanam tarikanyamahu samadhinatena samodha vijjati idam vidham me ratanam panitam etena sacchena suvati hotu ye pungala attasatam pasattha chattari etani yugani honti te dakineya sugatassa savaka etesu dinnani mahappalani idam kisam gerakhanam panitam sacchena suvati hotu ye suppayuddha manasa dauhena nikkamino gotama sasanam hi te pattipatta amatam vigaih laddha muda nibbutim punchamana idam pi sangge ratanam panitam etena sacchena suvati hotu yatindakhilo patavin sitosiya chatupivatehi asampakampiyo tatupamam sapurisam vadami yo ariya sat Jani avecca passati idam pi sangge ratanam panitam etena sacchena suvati hotu ye ariya sacchani vibhavayanti gambhīra-panyena sudeshitāni kiñcāpi te honti busappamattā na te bhavaṁ attamaṁ ādiyanti idaṁ pi Sangge ratanam panitam etena saccena suvatti hotu sahavasadasana sampadaya taya sudhamma jahita bhavanti sakkaya ditti vichinke chitancha silabbatam vapiyatati kinchi chatuha payehi cha vipamut Chabitanani abha bokatum idambi sangye ratanam panitam etena saccena suvatti hotu kinchapi sokham mang karoti papakam kathyena vacha uta chetasa abhaggo so tassa paticchadaya abhappata ditta padassa bhutta idhambi sang Geratanam panitam etena saccena suvatti hotu vanappagumbeyatha pussitage gimhalamase patamasmin gimhe Tatupamam dhammavaram adesai Nibbanagamin paramam hitaya Idhampi buddhe ratanam panitam Etena saccena suvatti hotu Varo varanyo varadho vara Anuttaro dhampavaram adesai Idhampi buddhe ratanam panitam Etena saccena suvatti Tihotu Hinam Puranam Navam Nati Sambhavam Virata Jitta Ayati Khe Bhavasmi Tehina Bija Aviruhi Chanda Ida nibbanti dhira yathayam padipo Idhampi sangye ratanam panitam Etena saccena suvatti hotu Yadida bhutta Samadhani Bhummadivaya Iva Antalikhe Tathagatam Deva Manusa Pujitam Buddhang Namasama Suvatti Hotu Nida bhutani samagatani Bhummani vajya iva antalikhe तथागतं देवमादो सपूजितं धम्मं न पश्यामः सुवति होतु यानीरभूतानि समागतानि ब्रह्माणि वायातिव अङ्कितलिखे तथागतं देवमानुषपूजितं सङ्गम सुवस्ति होतु एतेन सच वाजेन सोति देहोतु सर्वदा एतेन सच वाजेन साबरोगो विनाशतो एते सच वाचे होतु ते जय मंगला साधु
So my hearing is sadhya. Very beautiful Ratana Sutta chanting. This is the first time I heard this chanting, Ratana Sutta. But it's very beautiful. I read the English version also, and you all should read it. It's a very beautiful sutta. Okay. Today, we shall now rejoice with the wholesomeness and share this wholesomeness with all beings. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we start with the divas. Akasata sya bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantan anumoditwa jiran rakantu loka sasana Itawata chamehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idam menya tinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idam menya tinang hotu Sukhita hontu yatayo Deyang meya dinam hotu Sukhita hontu yatayo Deo asapkalena Sasa sampati hetu cha Vito bhavantu loko cha Raja bhavantu dhammiko Imina punyang kamena mame pa samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawang divanta papiyang sadu sadu sadu. Okay, let us now pay respect mindfully to Triple Jaya. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami Supatipano bhagavato sāvaka sangho sanghaṃ namāmi. Okay.